It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Welcome back to the next room. Boy, it was a gorgeous morning in Southern California. I took the puppy out for a nice long walk, and as she was smelling a particular bush for quite some time, I'm just standing there in just kind of mindfulness, and I don't know what I was thinking about, probably absolutely nothing, and a bird buzzed the back of my head and then flew off. Like, it literally ruffled my hair, and I thought, I better check my head and make sure that there's nothing, no gift that bird left behind. But it was so bizarre, and it just felt like another sign, you know, because I'm always feeling like I'm connecting with the souls that have gone before me. It may sound weird to some people, but to others, it makes perfect sense. And to me, it does. And that's really all that matters, because it's my truth, right? So the next room, we are going to speak to a fabulous lady that I met through the Final Exit Network. Her name is Althea Halchuk. She is a surrogate consultant for a FEN, whatever that is, she's going to tell me. She's a board-certified patient advocate. She mediates elder disputes for LA County Department of Consumer Affairs. She's a hospice volunteer. What doesn't Althea do? My goodness. Without further ado, thank you so much for coming on the show, Althea.
Thank you, Jane. I love your show. I just have to say that.
Aw, that's so nice. Usually,
we have such a variety of people in the death movement, positive death movement, we like to call it. And I've really enjoyed listening to so many of them.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? It really is. There are so many. Thank you for that, by the way. But there are so many great people that I am connecting with. And FEN has been a great resource. Of course, through the Beautiful Dying Expo is where I met all the folks from Final Exit. Now, Althea, what does a surrogate consultant do?
My role with Final Exit is to help people honor a loved one's advanced care directive. So say you're the proxy for your mom. Your mom is now incapacitated, and now you have come along to make the decisions for her. Hopefully everybody has an advanced directive and has picked a proxy or a surrogate. The names are interchangeable. Medical power of attorney is what we're talking about. And now you get to the hospital and your mom has said to you 1,000 times, I don't want a feeding tube, or I don't want to be intubated. If I'm really at the point where I'm unconscious and there's really no help of me coming back, there's just no hope of that, I don't want you to do anything. And that's always typically is spelled out in an advance directive.
Mm-hmm.
And the medical staff says, you know, we really like to put in a feeding tube because that will help her stay alive while we try this and that and the other thing. So what could happen in that circumstance is you're dead set against it because your mother was dead set against it. You can call me and I can lay out what your options are. People that have a power of attorney are really in the driver's seat. That's who the medical staff has to listen to. You know your mom. You know what she wanted. You have a written document that says what she wanted. So it's on them. They have a duty to listen to you and do what you say. But it doesn't always happen that way. And I had many circumstances where people, let me just back up. When FEN and I talked about doing this pilot program, they sent out an email to all of their members and asked, have you ever had this problem? And just like I described, pushback from medical staff or a hospice facility, that's another place. And they got so many letters. that they thought they were on the right track. So another place where this can happen is in a hospice facility. A lot of them now are for-profits. They're franchises. Hospice is like not hospice that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross started. It's almost nothing like that. Once the government started reimbursing, then there was money in it. And so now all these groups are in it for the profit, not for the patient. So they try to cut corners, like not giving enough pain meds or not providing comfort measures like a masseuse, somebody that can come in and massage somebody. That they used to do that all the time. Mm-hmm. And now it's difficult to get those things done. So in the case of the pain meds, that's a real issue. I hear it all the time. And so the goal of hospice is to stay ahead of the pain, not wait until you're in excruciating pain and then give you some little bit of morphine. That isn't really how it's meant to work. So those people can call me and say, okay, so what do I do?
Okay. So you're there as almost like a secondary safety net?
I guess that's a good way to put it. Final Exit, it's a free service to their members. And so if you're in that situation, and I say, I have language that I think would be appropriate for you to use, and you don't want to be confrontational, but you want to be assertive. And that's really two different things.
Okay.
So you assert your patient or your parent, whoever it is that whose advance directive you're trying to honor, you want to assert their rights because you're speaking for them. And if you say to a doctor, like he wants to put in a feeding tube, is always one of those things that, you know, is like a big red flag. If you say to him, I don't consent to that treatment, and I want you to put that in the medical record. Now, all of a sudden, used a couple of words that they're going to sit up and take notice.
Okay.
I don't consent. That's a big word,
mm-hmm.
really, in the jargon. And in the medical record, now you have a paper trail that you have not consented to treatment. And if they do the treatment, it could be battery. It could be assault. Because they're doing something to a patient that you're not authorizing.
Right.
And you are the one with power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people are intimidated by doctors. Doctors sometimes think they're gods and know everything. And patients of a certain age also think that because that's how they were raised.
Right.
But really, they work for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're supposed to do, as a surrogate, they're supposed to do what we are telling them to do.
Okay, good point. I want to circle back to something you said just a few moments ago. You said that speaking with you as a surrogate consultant for the Final Exit Network is a free service to FEN members.
Yes.
Okay, so how does one become a FEN member?
Well, there's the easiest way is to just go on their website and look for the membership tab.
Okay.
And there's a lot of benefits. They have a ton of resources. They have a magazine, which, by the way, featured on the cover, the last issue. And I got a call today from a lady who was a FEN member who doesn't use a computer, and she got my number from the magazine.
That's awesome.
So it's a really great benefit.
And they
also started, they got board approval to start two new trainings. I'm doing one, and we have an end-of-life doula doing the second one. She's doing, you know what VSET is? Voluntarily
yes.
Stopping eating and drinking?
Yes.
She's going to do a training to coach people who are going to help people going through VSET, because that's a real team effort.
Okay.
And my part of, it's a different, totally different training is, there's so many solo seniors around, people that do not have somebody to name as a surrogate. And the goal here is to train people in what it entails, you know, medical jargon that you're going to hear, how you, what traits and characteristics you need to have as a surrogate, you know, that whole a surrogate don't take no for an answer kind of thing. So that training is being offered too. And we're offering both of those programs to end-of-life doulas because they're in the trench anyway. And a lot of them have this kind of experience. And Fenn is doing the training for free. And then the doulas that take it can offer it as a service from their company, but we won't be involved in any of that. That will be between the doula and the client.
Okay.
We're just offering free training.
Okay.
And just before I forget, I have to get this in. If I can't help somebody in the moment, like in an ICU, they call me and say, oh my God, what do I do? And the doctors, I can not really mediate, but really facilitate a conversation with a medical provider that's giving the pushback. If he doesn't want to listen to anything, doesn't want to listen to reason, doesn't want to listen to the legal aspects of it, I can call in Robert Rivas, who will also act as a free attorney in the matter.
Okay.
So we have you covered from kind of head to toe.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I had Rob on the show. He's great. He is the official lawyer for the Final Exit Network. Okay, so you just become a member. It's not particularly expensive either, just for a year membership, is it?
No, it's $50 for a single member, and I believe it's $750 for a lifetime couple and $500 for a lifetime individual.
Okay. All right, well, good. And it's a nonprofit, and there's all kinds of benefits through the Final Exit
yep.
Network that you can, and resources that you can take part in.
Yes, and we're doing a webinar. Rob, I, and Crystal Flores, who's doing the VSED coaching part, she's going to give a talk. So member benefits, another one is free webinars.
Okay.
You know, and $50, if you think about it, it costs, I've been mailing out the magazine to various people, and it's $1.40 to mail it. So you have to think, you know, they do it four times a year. So there's producing the magazine, which is not free. It's a really glossy magazine. It's great, full of nice articles. So just that benefit alone, it barely covers the cost of membership.
Right. Okay. Well, cool. Now, you have your own website called Ending Well Patient Advocacy.
Correct.
Okay.
And well, I have my own business.
Your own business. So you have your own business, and you're working as a surrogate for Fenn.
Yes.
You're a busy woman.
And I'm doing the training.
And you're doing the training. How did you become involved in this compassionate death and dying community?
Really kind of at a young age. I was almost the same age as Karen Ann Quinlan when she had her problem and ended up on life support for 10 years. And I saw what she went through I was in my 20s and I thought, well, I'd never want that. And then Kevorkian, I always thought he was helping people. He was helping people have a good ending. And so I kind of followed him. And then my father-in-law was one of the first people, I believe, that was in hospice in 1985. And he died at home. They taught my mother-in-law how to give them morphine and all of that. And so my hospice experience was so positive that I became a hospice volunteer. And that really got me on the path. I mean, you know, I've been at the bedside of so many people and they all have such an interesting story, Jane. I mean, people that have won congressional medals of honor and you would just never know it. And you get to sit with them in this sacred time, and sometimes not even talk, just sit there and hold a hand. I'll listen to them talk about this and that. And so it's been my hospice experience that really kind of fine-tuned my end of life. I guess it's a calling. I mean, really.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. Being that you're around so many people that were in the transition mode through hospice, did you witness at the very end anything in particular? Did you experience something where you could see that they felt that there was something next?
I have. And it's one of those things about hospice. If you ask anybody in hospice, they've experienced that. And that's one of my other passions, is that I see dead people kind of story. My patient, she and her husband, they were both my patients in hospice, and he died. And I had to go sit with her while their daughter made funeral arrangements for the father. So the mother knew me because I'd been there before, and I came into the bedroom, and she, you know, says hello. And then she says to me, "Oh, dear, please don't sit on the end of the bed. That's where my husband is." And I said, okay, you know, didn't miss a beat, like, didn't argue with her. Yes, I mean, I believe she saw him. I really do. And since then, I've known about this phenomenon, if you want to call it. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Christopher Kerr. He's a hospice physician from Buffalo. And he did a study. He interviewed like 2,000 dying people on visions and dreams at end of life, because he knew it existed. And he said the medical community is never going to accept it until there's analytical data. Everything else had been storytelling. And so he's written a book. There's a movie coming out. I've heard him speak several times. And so it exists. There are people that come to your bedsides, and there's several books I've read about it, that they come to your bedside to bring you home. And most of the time, it's a great experience for the patient and the family, because here's the patient in the bed, like I was before death, reaching out and talking to their dead husband who's on the other side. And the kids are in the room and they're saying, like, we've never seen her so peaceful. Mm. She's been like out of it for a month. And all of a sudden, now she's talking to a dead son or another relative or a friend or a pet.
Right.
And so, you know, I read those kinds of books, like near death experience kind of books. I know you had a guest on that talked about that has an organization. And those people, they've actually seen the other side and they've come back. And you can say it's hoo-ha if you want, but I believe everything they tell me. I of course, I have the ability to suspend disbelief, and I believe there's a new TV show called Resident Alien, and this guy crashes on Earth, and he's an alien. And there's only one kid in the whole town that can see this guy as an alien. Everybody else, he looked like another guy. And so I suspend disbelief. I believe it all. And so that's how I am about end of life and visions and dreams. And I've just heard too many stories, Jane, from people that were there at the bedside of their mother or their father or their sister who they've seen people.
I love
it. That's kind of that's what I've seen.
What about signs once someone has crossed over to the next room? What about the crossover or them leaving signs for other people? Have you experienced that?
I wish I had. You know, your dime story, that really grabbed me. And I don't have that kind of ESP or... I do believe in signs. I believe they're coming. I don't think they're coming from anybody I know, although that's possible. It's more of a religious, I believe it's Jesus helping me out or giving me this, or like ghostwriters we were talking about before. I can ignore something for just so long, and then it keeps getting put in front of me until I act on it. So if that's a sign, it's, I don't know who's putting the sign there. And my husband is, he has, like, if he tells me not to get on a plane, I'm not getting on that plane, because he has that kind of perception. But I don't have that.
Okay. What about speaking to those that have crossed before us? Do you do that? Do you have any kind of connection to those that have gone before you?
I do. I talk to them, but I haven't heard them talk to me back.
Okay.
So, you know, and I heard one of your shows where you said that people should talk to people on the other side. And I think I'll start doing that. My dad is one. And I just yesterday said something to somebody that had died. And so I think I'm trying to incorporate that to, like you say, the veil is getting thinner. And so even though I don't have any of those higher powers that some people seem to possess, maybe I can develop and make the veil thinner so I can reach out to people that I've loved and lost.
I just heard you use the word or the deity, Jesus. So
yes.
What is your definition or your interpretation of the Almighty?
Well, as God, I believe in the Bible and that he sent Jesus down to us and he died for our sins. I mean, that's my basic Christianity view of things. And you mentioned like people over on the other side. I don't see them as much as I see Jesus.
Okay.
I was walking a labyrinth one time. You know what a labyrinth is?
Yes, I sure do.
Yeah. Okay. So they're one of my other favorite things. And so I was walking at one time and I actually felt the presence there. So I feel him more than anything else.
Okay. So what do you suppose or what do you hope for is in the next room? Or in your interpretation, it might be referred to as heaven.
Well, Jesus for sure. That would be one person. My dad, because we were really close, and I miss him a lot. And I got remarried. He didn't really care too much for my first husband, but my second husband was he had met him, but he didn't know I married him. And my second husband golfed, and my dad golfed, and that was one of those things. I wished he was still alive so I could go golfing with him. So maybe in heaven we'll do that.
There you go.
My daughter had a dog, and I was never as close to a dog as this. She was a boxer named Abby, and my daughter got her as a puppy. And my daughter was living in Arizona at the time. She's really an East Coast gal, but she was living in Arizona working here, and excuse me, I was in California living, so now she was only 500 miles apart, and I would come and I'd spend a weekend and I'd have the dog. And walking her twice a day along the canal, and she was just such a spitfire. And she would sit there, she was this little bit of it, she was like the runt of the litter, I think, she was really a small boxer. And she would sit there, and if somebody else were walking by or another dog, she'd just sit and right in front of me and protect me. And we just had this great dog-human relationship, and she died probably about, I'd say, 3 years ago. And she was old by then, but she's definitely, I hope, in the next room.
Okay. All right. I have another one for you. I can hear clearly that you're Christian, and you are a surrogate consultant for the Final Exit Network, which helps people, and, you know, it's this whole network based on dying well. What do you mm-hmm. say to somebody who think that the Right to Die movement goes against religious beliefs?
I'd say I don't see where it's written in the Bible that people have to suffer. When someone has a terminal illness or they're at the end of life and they know it, why shouldn't they have the right to choose to hasten it? And I think we all have free will. We all have a right to choose. And I don't see where religion really comes into it. Not for me, anyway. I think there's a lot of stories about my current church, and I don't get along about this issue, this very issue. And I said, I think God shines a light on this work. And I'm happy to, if I make it to heaven, have a discussion. Because I don't think it's between me and God,
mm-hmm.
and it's between people and God if they believe in a God, and if they don't, it's their free will to make a choice.
Very well said. My guest is Althea Helchuk. She's a surrogate consultant for the Final Exit Network. She also has her own business, Ending Well Patient Advocacy. I will put both those links, the one to Fenn and the one to her website, so you can read up all about her or reach out to her if something has resonated throughout this interview, which I have a feeling you are really going to get a lot of feedback, because this has been very, very enlightening, Althea. I really appreciate your just how candid you are and how you are just speaking your truth. I really do thank you for that.
Well, thank you for having me on, and really, I'm looking forward to the Beautiful Dying Expo, because I was traveling somewhere when that was this year, so I missed it. But
yeah.
I'm hoping for everything to open up again, so we can do all this stuff in person and live. And
yeah, that would be nice. I think 2021,
yeah.
The Beautiful Dying Expo is still going to be virtual. It'll be, I believe, the first weekend of November. We're hoping, fingers crossed, that 2022 will have us virtual as well as in a solid space where we can be, meet one another and we can have, just a really good connection. But it's a great organization. If you want to know more about the Beautiful Dying Expo, you can just click on the logo right on my show page, and it will take you right to their website, because The Next Room is the official podcast for the Beautiful Dying Expo. Had to get that in there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, I'm glad to give you the plug, because the more we talk about death and shine a light on all of it, the better off everyone is going to be.
There you go. Well, I like that thought, because I call it life after life, just because of my beliefs and my thought process of what is next in the next room is just a continuation mm-hmm. of life, maybe on a grander, higher, elevated perspective. So I shall see someday, just like you will. And I sure appreciate you coming on, Althea Helchuk, my guest today on The Next Room. Any final thoughts?
Have the conversation with your family about what care you want at the end of life. Don't put it off. Tell people you love them. Mend your fences. Put your house in order. It will make your family grateful when you're gone, and it will give you peace of mind.
Beautiful. Thank you.
That's my end-of-life advice.
That's good end-of-life advice. And here you were worried about editing the show if you said something stupid. You are so funny. I would never edit. I don't believe in it. I just like it to roll because it is a conversation. And I thank you for the conversation, Althea Helchuk. Thank you to Final Exit Network, the Beautiful Dying Expo, and all of the great people that continue to have these conversations with me on The Next Room. Until next week, have yourself a beautiful Monday.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.